There's a lot of money in our politics. That's no secret, especially during an election year. Hundreds of millions of dollars were donated to campaigns for congressional races alone in 2020, including some for candidates who ended up losing by a lot. That's prompted some Democrats to criticize their party's approach, saying it's spending too much on individual campaigns, not enough on grassroots organizing. Our next guest agrees and says that while giving money to a long-shot candidate might feel good, there are better ways to help build political success. And he says individual donors, big and small, can make more effective use of their resources. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you've donated to a campaign that you support, what went into your decision to do that? Do you think your party of choice should spend less on candidates directly, more on groups that operate outside of an election year? Have you worked with that kind of ongoing political effort, maybe at the local level, a little less a little more unsung than the high-profile stuff? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Eitan Hirsch is an associate professor of political science at Tufts University, author of the book Politics is for Power, How to Move Beyond Political Hobbyism, Take Action, and Make Real Change. Eitan, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
I want to talk about this idea of political hobbyism, because that feeds into some of what we're talking about here. Can you explain what that term is all about?
Sure. So if you were in my political science class and you asked me like what politics is, I would say it's working with other people with some goal and some strategy to influence the government, right? Like you might try to get new people elected or influence policymakers, but there's a goal and there's a strategy. But for 90% of Americans or so, that's not what politics is at all. It's not about achieving goals. It's about feeling feelings or being intellectually engaged. And when we do politics as a form of intellectual or emotional engagement, that's sort of for instant gratification, I refer to that as political hobbyism. It has a lot more in common with like obsessive sports fandom than it does with politics.
And you see that driving donors, big and small in some cases, for Democrats, the opportunity to overturn senators like Mitch McConnell or Lindsey Graham, despite apparently being doomed from the word go. For Republicans, maybe the opportunity to try to vote Ilhan Omar or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez out of office. Some money went into those races. What is it that gets people donating to those sort of long shot campaigns?
Right. So whether you're donating $10 or $1 million, you can be really kind of thoughtful and strategic about it, or you could just press a button to make yourself feel good. Right. You can be Tom Steyer and blow hundreds of millions of dollars running for president. If you have that kind of money, just like you could be sitting on your couch at home and you see a viral video attacking Mitch McConnell and you say to yourself, it makes me feel good to give $5 because I don't like Mitch McConnell. And that video gives me a sense of catharsis. And so when you're doing politics like that, donating like that, you're not really being like a thoughtful in what you're doing. You're just trying to feel a connection to that. Obviously, the internet donations that come through emails or in response to viral videos of campaign events or of congressional hearings is a big driver for this. And so as we moved, of course, to mostly online giving with COVID, that stuff took on a lot more prominence. People are getting these emails, really manipulative emails on both sides, political left and political right. Democrats are getting emails saying the polling is showing Amy McGrath has a chance in Kentucky, even though that's not true. They're saying these emails are saying, if you donate now, your donation will be quadruple matched. That's not a thing. So people are kind of being lied to about politics and making themselves feel like they need to do something. And they're kind of responding to that. They're responding to the provocation, to misinformation. And they're not stopping and thinking and saying, if I have a $10 budget or a $10,000 budget, what really kind of conveys my values in a thoughtful, strategic way?
Now, Democrats from progressives like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to moderates like Alabama Senator, just lost his election, Doug Jones, have been making the case that their party needs to do things differently. I want to give a listen to Senator Doug Jones here.
But again, it is not going to happen overnight. You got to temper the enthusiasm with reality about some things, and you got to get into these communities and work these every day, every week, every month. You can't just wait till and roll around an election. I think that that's been the biggest problem of Democrats in the South and other areas over the last 20, 30 years. We just go from one candidate to the next. We go from one election to the next. We really hadn't done the spade work that needs to be done.
And I think you would make the case that, Eitan, that whatever party you're part of, whatever cause you are part of, that's a smarter way to work. Can you talk about that?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you can't just come in with an election with all the money in the world and convince people to vote your way. Really, you know, the way you're going to win elections is by having deep roots to a community that you can connect people to your political goals over a long period of time. And what's happened over time is on the political right, there are quite strong social structures. First of all, the political right tends to be older and more importantly tends to be regulars at churches and in-person communities. Meanwhile, on the left, you have the decimation of labor unions over time, plus a kind of withdrawal from civil society, religious society, in terms of like, you know, the number of people attending a weekly meeting of any kind. You know, today, most people who are regular daily news consumers, most of those people belong to zero organizations. In the last year, they've attended zero meetings in their community. They report on surveys having worked zero times with anyone else on any civic or political venture. And so if your connection to politics is just online through following the news or being an amateur pundit and not in in-person political life, or even in the COVID era, in Zoom meetings with neighbors connecting to people, then you don't have deep enough roots to connect to people and convince them to vote for your candidates. And so, you know, we try to have band-aids when we lack those social connections. You know, a campaign advertisement is a band-aid, a postcard, a campaign, phone calls, and in-person canvasses. These are saying, hey, let's try to connect to voters we don't really know, in a one-off attempt to get a vote. But really, you're going to suffer in your political cause if you can't lay down a much stronger foundation. And what's amazing is that you saw, you know, whether you see this in Doug Jones or Ocasio-Cortez, who have really different policy goals, they've happened upon the same solution, right? Which is essentially there are no shortcuts here.
We're picking up our talk with Eitan Hirsch right now, Associate Professor of Political Science at Tufts University, looking at political donations, political spending, what works, and what doesn't work so well. Let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. Franco is with us in Grand Marsh. Franco, hi.
Hi, good afternoon, Rob. I have a question, and rather than ask Google, I'd much rather ask your guest. I've always been curious when politicians run for office and they raise all this money for their campaign, win or lose, do they get to keep all this money for themselves and spend it on themselves? I mean, if you could, it sounds like you could get rich, win or lose. God bless.
Franco, thanks for the call. I think that's not at least what's supposed to happen with the money, Eitan. A lot of it gets spent enriching broadcasters, private broadcasters along the way. What else do we know about how money has to be disposed of?
Yeah, so that's a good question. If you have a lot of money left over in your campaign account, you can give it to a political party or to a charity, but you can't give it to yourself. So there are strict rules against that.
Thanks a lot for the call, Franco, at 800-642-1234. Eitan, you make the case in some of the pieces you've written recently about this and in your book as well, that people should get into not just that, hey, impassioned donation 10 days before Election Day, but to the day-to-day work of politics. And that could strike people, especially the political hobbyists you're worried about, as, you know, not big enough, too small scale, maybe too boring. What would you say to people to motivate them to do that important political work?
Yeah, so the first thing people say is usually I don't have enough time, but they're spending an hour or two a day on politics plus, you know, streaming endless Netflix episodes. So I know many people do have time, and that's who I'm talking to here. And for those who have time, have some time. I guess I would, what I argue in the book is that the local stuff is really important. You know, whether you're on the right, if you're on the right, you might think the most important thing going on outside of COVID is economic development. If you're on the left, you say on surveys, the most important thing going on are issues about the environment or racial equality. And, you know, at the state and the county level, a lot of decisions are made about issues of racial equality in schools and policing, about environmental issues related to transit and other issues. And so there's a ton of work to do. A lot of people think they live in maybe like a blue or red bubble, you know, in their town. But it's not true. When you start working on any of these issues locally, there's a lot of people that need convincing. And who's ever there trying is going to get more power than people who aren't trying. So I would say not only is getting involved in politics very useful at the state and local level, and it's useful not just on, you know, solving potholes, but on solving big, big important issues as they affect local community. But they also help to break down this, I think, completely incorrect idea that we live in some polarized world. You know, you could be in an all Democratic area of your city and the people who live in there, they disagree with you about the environment, about how to pay for reform and all that stuff. And so, you know, it gets us out of this cycle of thinking we live in this big country where it's good versus evil or smart versus stupid. Politics really isn't like that. And you can see it once you get involved. I have to also say that getting involved in real politics is so much more gratifying at a personal level, moving other people, being in community, that, you know, nothing on Instagram can possibly match it.
We are talking about how we can have an impact on politics with Eitan Hersh right now from Tufts University. He says, hey, that long shot candidate, maybe that's not what you need to support with your donation. Let's bring out another caller. Carolyn is with us in Pewaukee. Carolyn, hi.
Hi. I was calling to see if your guest today had any experience with the technique of deep canvassing and if he feels like that's a more effective strategy than a lot of the other things that we've discussed that are just sort of hobbies.
And Carolyn, have you done this deep canvassing before? If so, what's it like?
I don't, but my best friend works for a nonprofit that does it in Minnesota, and they were involved in a campaign deep canvassing for Biden this year.
Carolyn, thanks for the call. Are you familiar with this, Eitan, this deep canvassing?
Yeah, there's multiple chapters in the book dedicated to this idea. It's a really important idea because, you know, when in deep canvassing, you're basically having a real conversation with a stranger who disagrees with you. And what you bring to that conversation is a non-judgmental attitude, a sense of empathy, and you convey to the voter what's important to you and why, but mostly you listen. And it just looks so different than most canvassing. There are people who maybe they dedicate over the last few months, one night a week, to phone calls where they use a deep canvassing strategy, but on the phone. And, you know, maybe over the course of 2 hours, they have two or three conversations that are long, half hour conversations. They connect to a voter. And those conversations are more effective, more influential, have longer term effects on other people compared to any other form of persuasion. And, you know, what deep canvassing has in common with all strategies that are really strategic is empathy. You know, the book I wrote, I called Politics is for Power, which makes people uncomfortable. Like, what's power? Power is getting people to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. And empathy is a core strategy in doing that. And what's so amazing is when you see politics online, like on social media, you see that the goal is not to empathize with another person to get them to move toward you. The goal is that catharsis. It's trying to get something off your chest. And so we see so clearly that in social media politics and political hobbyism, we're not building power. We're just doing something for ourselves. Where in a strategy like deep canvassing, we really are trying to move other people slow and steady to see the world as we see it.
Eitan, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Eitan Hersh is an associate professor of political science at Tufts University, author of the book Politics is for Power, How to Move Beyond Political Hobbyism, Take Action, and Make Real Change.